Hello and welcome again to the Dark Money Files, in which we usually like to shine a light into a murky world. Currently, though, we're engaged in our end-of-year review. I'm Ray Blake. Joining me is my colleague Graham Barrow. Say hello, Graham.
Hello, Ray. And here we are at part two already.
Absolutely. When we kicked this off last time, we thought we'd cover half the year, but we only managed to cover the first quarter.
Can't believe it.
So prepare yourselves for rather more of these than we imagined there might be. When we left you, we just finished March, hadn't we? So
we had.
April. April, Graham. Remember April?
Yeah. It makes a logical sequence. That's a good start. But other than that, it does seem so long ago.
It really does. Do you remember those crazy days when we started hearing the death rumours of Kim Jong-un?
Well, yeah, we didn't have an awful lot else to do, mind you, because by then we were in full lockdown and kind of looking at the outer reaches of the BBC website for something to read. So, yes, I do remember Twitter was alive with the rumours.
Rumours are a funny thing in the context of North Korea, though, aren't they?
Well, and Fleetwood Mac, to be honest. But yes, in the terms of North Korea, it's particularly odd, yeah.
I mean, how do rumours work in North Korea, where people are actually afraid to talk and have very little way of getting any word outside their borders anyway? How does that work?
Paper aeroplanes, Ray.
Paper aeroplanes over the demilitarised zone. Absolutely fantastic.
That's my theory. Yep, they write stuff on paper aeroplanes and launch them over the demilitarised zone.
Okay. Okay, our glorious leader is not well.
Yeah.
Okay. Well, I can see that. I think this is a job for someone like David Icke, isn't it? To go and expose what's going on there.
Do you know, I can't think of a better place to send David Icke currently than North Korea. I think that's a splendid idea.
I think we should suggest it.
I'm
not sure he would want to label the glorious leader as a clothed reptile, though, would he?
No, but given that I think Mr. Icke is an anti-vaxxer, and given that North Korea is completely devoid of COVID, it seems the perfect place to go.
Oh, yeah. Well, he'll be safe there at least.
You say safe, right? So do we think he died?
Safe, yeah.
Do we think he died?
Who, David Icke? No, he's alive and well, unfortunately, Graham.
And Kim Jong-un?
Kim Jong-un. Well, I'm not sure. How would we know? How would we know? He was already an identikit leader.
There may be a whole bunch of other similarly looking gentlemen lined up just to manage the transition, for all we know.
Absolutely. And I mean, as I understand it, he's a kind of Dalai Lama figure in any case, in that he's just the reincarnation of the original glorious leader, right?
Well absolutely. And you know, I reckon I've worked out what his doppelganger will be called.
Go on. So
well, following Kim Jong-un, you'll get Kim Wrong-un.
Oh, Graham. Oh, no.
I'm quite pleased with that. Kim Wrong-un.
Do you know what? I am sure you're very pleased with that. But I mean, you're right, though. April was a funny time for all of us. And you know, in that first flush of lockdown and the kind of blitz spirit too, we all embraced all sorts of things, didn't we? I mean, Joe Wicks started his PE. I did a bit of Joe Wicks of a Friday morning. That was
did you?
I did, yeah. I did some Joe Wicks.
It absolutely killed me. Talk about the journey you've been on this year at the appropriate moment.
Well, when we come to it. Let's do that.
I still haven't seen a single minute of Joe Wicks.
Oh, no. He was, it was very good, but it damn near killed me. We all started quizzing as well, didn't we? Those of us who hadn't previously.
But
little did we realise then that would be probably the only new leisure pursuit that emerged. From the COVID times, and it got fairly old fairly quickly, didn't it, quizzing?
Well, it did. And of course, we all got introduced to the delights of Zoom, which, because most people had never heard of before, lockdown and Teams. But Zoom quizzing became a thing, didn't it?
It did. Yeah. And you know, still is in many circles. I mean, you know, phrase of the year, were we searching for one, could be, you're on mute.
Yeah.
Couldn't it?
Yeah. Or my other one, which is, your camera is still on.
Oh, no, don't. Yeah, no, fabulous. Moving on.
Yes.
So in May, it looked for a minute as though, you know, things were going to go back to normal in the chaos returned to certain parts of the world, didn't it?
Yeah, it certainly did. Yes. Well, Hong Kong in particular, I think.
Yes, absolutely. So we had the protesters back out on the streets in Hong Kong, didn't we?
Yeah.
So that's another one of those, isn't it? Were they protests or were they riots?
Yeah, it's one of those paradigm issues, isn't it? It's like, are they terrorists or are they freedom fighters? And it is all down to your particular view of the world,
yeah,
isn't it?
I mean, to paraphrase a wonderful piece of scripting from Yes Minister in the old days, is this one of those irregular verbs? I protest, you riot, he loots.
It is brilliant, isn't it? I mean, it is so easy to forget. Some of the writing in that was just sublime.
Yeah, very much so.
And still oft quoted today.
Yes.
And I fancy a lot of it is brilliant because its departure from the truth is so minor that a lot of people watching it would recognise those situations in real life anyway.
Yeah, famously Mrs. Thatcher's favourite television programme.
Yes. That's odd, actually, because we were saying, I don't know if you've noticed this, but as Boris has started losing weight, his eyes have started approximating to Margaret Thatcher's. If you have a look next, he has those same angled brows that she had. It's very weird.
Talking of Yes Minister, if you look at those sort of Gerald Scarfe cartoons of Mrs. Thatcher from the 1980s, they do have a real Boris Johnson look about them, you know, those slightly downward slanting eyes and you know, the hawk-like nose. It's
and the,
spooky
and the total disregard
it.
For most people's feelings.
Well, there's that too. Yeah.
Oh dear, promise I wouldn't get political, but
no, I don't think that's political, Graham, is it? Surely.
Well, I think in terms of if the UK was a brewery at the moment, we're not having too much of a, excuse the expression, piss up, are we?
Not really. No, not really.
So yeah. So May was, I mean, May was almost month zero, I think, in our household. It was just lockdown fatigue. It was just a point of getting through, wasn't it, really? Clap once a week for the NHS. And you know, Ray, it is wonderful to see how that clapping has sustained the NHS ever since. And there are so many people who are buying their Christmas turkey with claps this year. It's
yes.
Wonderful.
Bit of satire there, Graham.
It was, right? I fear I might have missed my calling, or then maybe I didn't.
It was calling, you didn't hear it, Graham.
I didn't know. I'm so,
but I mean, it was an odd time, wasn't it? Because the other thing there was it was quite a charming spring, wasn't it? At least in southern England, you had clear skies broadly. For the first time that, you know, almost anyone could remember, you know, much cleaner air. There were all sorts of stories about environmental improvements.
Yes.
I think we all got a bit carried away with the idea, didn't we?
Well, yes. And to go back to our earlier discussion on weather and climate, whether this is just weather or climate, we had a remarkable spring. And it would have been extremely difficult getting through the lockdown first time round without the fact that we did actually have some glorious weather. So you weren't entirely, for those of us who have outside space, I know that's not everyone, you could actually get out in your outside space and get warm and sunshine. Which it must have just been appalling for somebody on a, you know, on the 10th floor of a tower block with three kids, the single parent. You know, you can't imagine how bad it must have been for some. So I'm always a bit careful when I say, well, you know, lockdown wasn't so bad. I realise I'm in a reasonably fortuitous situation.
No, very much so. And you know, there are some appalling situations that you read about, you know, getting locked down with an abuser, for instance. And
yes. I had a thought the other day, by the way, about, and I'm sure if there's any journalists listen, they're welcome to this thought. Every now and again, you read about people who commit bigamy in real time, by which I mean they actually maintain two marriages concurrently rather than accidentally marry somebody before they finish the divorce. Just wonder, during lockdown, anyone who was actually in a full-blown, you know, bigamist situation, how did they manage that? There's some stories to tell there, isn't there?
Oh, I'm sure, yeah. I mean, you do hear about these things, don't you, in peacetime, as it were. But I'm not sure how that would work on a war footing. You're absolutely right.
You know, you can only get away with, I'm working away from home 3 days of the week for so long. But when you're not allowed to go to work anymore, what do you do?
Absolutely right. I think someone should look into that, Graham. You're right.
Oh, I suspect post this, there will be a whole rash of books and films about stories that probably none of us have even thought of yet about, you know, its impact on small groups within society and how they're coped.
Do you know what? I'm not sure there'll be the public appetite for a vast array of film and literature covering the lockdown period. I think we might like to move on to more escapist entertainment.
I suspect it will be a while before the COVID equivalent of Dad's Army emerges.
Yeah, I think so. I think so. You know, the golden era of the war film wasn't the late 1940s, was it?
No, it took 25 years before they could actually do Dad's Army because it wouldn't have been funny before that.
No, absolutely. And Allo Allo took even longer.
Well, it did.
And still didn't manage the trick of being funny.
well, some people might say, but that's a tragedy riot.
Well, tragedy plus time isn't necessarily comedy.
No. Point taken.
No, quite. So June.
June. Busting out all over.
Well, June, we finally had a single candidate to run against Mr. Trump.
We did.
And who would have thought it would turn out to be Joe Biden?
Yes, that sprightly septuagenarian politician.
Well, quite. I mean, he's a testament to the value of persistence, really, isn't he? I mean, what a career that man's had.
Has he?
Yeah.
Well, he's been a VP and a senator, so yeah, fair enough.
And he's run for president, what, two, three times?
He has.
Possibly more. He's been prominent in US politics over decades. And I mean, what a final chapter. I mean, who could have imagined the circumstances in which he would finally, you know, emerge and win?
Yeah.
I mean, he doesn't seem to tire either, does he?
Well, he doesn't. I mean, I do think it tells us something quite interesting about the state of US politics, where the person put up to run against Trump was a man, you know, without being rude, but older and whiter than Trump himself is. It is. I mean, clearly there was a view that was the most electable alternative. And I, you know, don't get me wrong, I was delighted to see him win, but it is also slightly sad that we're still living in a world where the old predictable archetypes are the ones we still live by.
Yeah, and I mean, theoretically, this is a guy who could spend longer in the White House than anyone else, you know, in living memory. He could spend 16 years in the White House, 8 as vice president and 8 as president.
He could.
And would you know in recent years who came closest to achieving that, Graham?
Off the top of my head, right? No, but I fancy you do.
I do know. I do know. It was Richard Milhouse Nixon, who was 8 years as a VP to Dwight Eisenhower and then served 6 years as president. So he got as far as 14. And before that, you'd need to go back to the Roosevelt era when there wasn't, of course, a two-term limit.
No. No. And, of course, the present incumbent's going to do nothing like that, is he?
Well, he might spend a long time in a single location in the fairly near future.
Well, he might, and they might decide to paint it white, especially for him, so he can say, I'm still in the White House. Nixon, he's an interesting guy, Nixon. I mean, obviously, you know, he famously resigned before his full impeachment and then got pardoned for any existing or future crime by Gerald Ford, which was an interesting use of the presidential pardons. But also interesting to remember that one of his great achievements was that he generated this rapprochement with China.
He did.
And went over there and you know, had very high-level talks with the Chinese. Didn't go down all that well with some of the other elements of the Chinese political hierarchy. Mm. But you know, he wasn't just all bad, Nixon.
No.
But it's rather lost in the tumultuous history that followed him.
No, absolutely. Unfortunately, infamy does kind of tend to bleed out, doesn't it? And colour your legacy overall.
Yes, and I think at least President Trump in this respect isn't going to have anything to challenge the infamy.
I can't think of very much, to be honest. No, it's fairly it's a single tone palette, really, isn't it?
I mean, clearly you can't ignore the fact, obviously, that two major drugs companies in America have produced at extraordinary speed what looks like two extremely effective vaccines with a lot of other global help. But you do wonder if that was in spite or because at least one of them took no part whatever in the government's initiatives to make that happen. So I suspect we'll have to wait for history to tell us the
And ultimately, story. The government is a lot more than one person, isn't it, Graham?
Well, it is, but I think you can't escape the fact that this government has been run in a way that no previous government I can recall in the US being run. I cannot remember quite such a revolving door policy of senior personnel. It's been quite extraordinary.
No, absolutely. Almost coming back to what we were saying last week, like a medieval cult, really.
Yes. Yes, and I mean, I think the other thing it does show us is, you know, our grip on democracy is quite tenuous. It's while democracy is an extraordinary thing, the ability to usurp it is still very definitely there. And of course, like coronavirus has made it somewhat easier. I suspect we'll see even here in the UK stories emerge that suggest that not all was went well during the last 12 months.
No, indeed. And it's a very visible sign of a cherished concept bending extremely, but not quite breaking.
Yes.
So it was June as well, wasn't it, Graham, that the SpaceX craft joined the International Space Station?
Yeah, and that's... You know, it's easy to kind of gloss over that the idea that not only have we now got private companies launching spacecraft, but they're by and large reusable. You know, go back into the 60s when I was watching men land on the moon. Mm. Most of those concepts were just ridiculous. And they're doing it, apparently, at a fraction of the cost of what NASA were spending. So, yeah, there's a whole load of interesting stuff going on there.
There absolutely is, but I think, you know, one of the more interesting aspects of this is the extent to which Elon Musk is the living embodiment of the mad scientist, isn't he?
He is quite extraordinary because on the one hand, you look at what he's done at SpaceX and Tesla, and you think that's amazing. And then you look at some of his tweets and some of his kind of political opinions and you think, that's balmy.
Yeah.
You know? Yeah. Very odd. I mean, you can't talk about Elon Musk without having that conversation about what happened over in Southeast Asia and the guy you went to try and rescue these lads from the flooded mine getting called pedo guy. And apparently in the US, that's perfectly acceptable comment, which I'm not sure it would have worked the same over here.
No, absolutely not.
Which, I mean, you know, obviously some of the things that we've reported on this year require a huge kind of liberal approach to what is your First Amendment's right of free speech. So it is difficult, isn't it, when, you know, you support free speech. I mean, are we back to protests and riots? Is free speech okay when it's something you agree with and terrible when it's something you disagree with? Yeah, yes,
probably. Yes, I think that's probably, if we're honest, how most of us would define it, Graham.
It was very apparent with the FinCEN files, where lots of people who were huge supporters of the Panama Papers, because it wasn't us, suddenly become very against the idea of leaks and whistleblowers, because it's our turn in the spotlight. So,
Back to Dad's Army, they don't like it, Upham.
Well, absolutely.
To coin a rather unfortunate phrase.
Yeah, you can coin that phrase all you like, because it just sums it up, doesn't it? They don't like it, Upham. It's odd. I mean, we are, this is more of a general conversation, but we've become very poor at dealing with criticism now. It's live in a bubble, and if you criticise me, I'll block you. And it's, I worry about that.
No, I understand. We are all extraordinarily fragile these days. That's not to justify, you know, the terrible things that people often say to each other, increasingly on a public basis. But we are fragile.
We are, and I think one of the differences, and I suspect it is a consequence of social media and 280 characters, is you and I both spend a great deal of our lives as coaches. We would train people on how to give feedback, and one of the things we'd always say is focus on the behaviour and not on the person. The criticism is of what they said or did and not who they are. But that's quite hard to do in 280 characters. And what I think has happened is now the criticism is the person, and that becomes insulting. And that's an interesting route to be journeying down, and not one I think that will end terribly well.
Yeah, well, I think it's an inevitable consequence of us all believing that we are our own brands.
I think you're right, and in order to get your 15 minutes of fame, you just have to be more outrageous than the other people enjoying their 15 minutes of fame, and that's problematic. I'm happy to be, you know, moderately well known amongst a very small group of anti-money laundering specialists. It works for me.
Yeah, very much so. And in order to maintain that kind of profile, do you need to resort to very much outrage, Graham?
No, I find outrage is tiring, Ray. The problem with outrage is the person it tends to have the most impact on is the person who gets outraged, and that's rather pointless. It has little impact on the rest, so I'd rather maintain a reasonable equilibrium and just shrug. I think shrugging is a vastly underrated response.
I agree with you. Born to be mild, that's us, Graham.
it's you know, the two best things you can do in life is have a hug and then a shrug. It's fine.
Perhaps not this year.
This year has been a bit hard on the hugs, so we need to maybe major shrugs.
Shrugs are still available to us, so
they certainly are.
Let's embrace that. Well, no, that's a bad turn of phrase as well.
Let's not embrace the shrug. That's as bad as a hug.
Oh, for goodness sake. I think we ought to end this at this point.
I think we probably should. It's been another fascinating conversation. I don't know whether people listening will enjoy it, but I know I have.
I don't care, Graham. I really don't. It's fun, this.
Johnny is, Ray. And now I'm looking forward to doing
There are lots of podcasts, Graham. They can listen to another one. That's fine.
They can. We won't take offence. We will not have outrage if you don't listen to it. It's okay.
No.
Except if you've just heard me say that, you have listened to it.
Yeah, what are you doing? Turn it off. Go and listen to something else. We're going to.
Well, if you've enjoyed it, come back for part three, which we will be recording shortly.
We will.
Yeah, we're going to, unbelievably, we're going to start next time around with July.
I'm looking forward to it.